Chattanooga.
Masters Thursday.
Masters Thursday, opening day. Welcome to Freightonomics, where we discuss the freight market and the macroeconomic global environment and how they all make sense and work together. I'm Zach Strickland, head of Freight Market Intelligence. Tony Mulvey.
Senior analyst,
head of all things research. Today, this week. All right.
For the moment.
Yeah. we had a big release.
Yes.
We talked, the CPI release came out. This has been like a pivotal number.
Two big releases, really.
Truth. There's so much hinging on policy around the CPI number. And I think that's really, there's so much downstream impacts. We're going to break those down today. And then the freight market itself, of course, it's April. I think this has been like, has April become like the really just kind of the organizational conferencing time for most people?
It feels that way. I mean, you look at LinkedIn and I think somebody's been, or like all I see is people at conferences every week.
Yeah.
It feels like throughout March and
like
early
internal
April.
Internal conferences.
That I know too, that, QBRs, things like that. Yeah.
I mean, we're having our own.
I mean, my dad just got back from his.
Yeah.
So it's, I think a little bit of everybody, it feels like traveling or in internal meetings all the time.
Yeah. And I would have thought some of that would have manifested, because normally I find it fascinating that sometimes you have these, like, you know, we think that we're all doing things independently of each other.
Yeah.
We're really in sync with each other, whether we know it or not. And sometimes all these organizational initiatives, from tech to consumer goods to travel, all have the same kind of cadence about how they approach their organization.
Absolutely. It's crazy. It's almost, it's very cyclical in the way you think of things. And we talk about freight being cyclical. I mean, I've looked at other industries, airlines and like specifically, it's very cyclical. I mean, like ridiculously cyclical. I could tell you how things are going to move based on the time of the year.
You know what else is cyclical?
The freight market.
The freight market sure is cyclical. So let's go ahead and give the people an update if you want to count me in.
All right, Zach, you're marking in 3, 2, 1.
All right, I'm going to spend some time on this one here to start things off. This is our outbound tender rejection index in white with our NTI, National Truckload Index, that measures spot aggregated spot rates for dry van freight moving more than 250 miles in that kind of teal color there. So the market itself, you can see after a pretty active winter, this is a year chart. So after a pretty active winter, we've stabilized, settled down. But I think the big takeaway for me is that looking at this from a year perspective, these figures are up and to the right.
Yep.
And that's probably something that's been extremely imperceptible. And of course, the numbers themselves, it's, yes, the scale matters here, and the scale is making this appear probably a little bit more dramatic than it really is, especially if I pulled this out, which I will do here in a minute. It will not seem quite as dramatic. But I think the whole story here is that the market is turning, whether you feel it or not. It is absolutely, versus the time period last year, we are going up and to the right. We had a lot more active winter due to the winter weather situation. Spot rates did increase, tender rejection rates increased. We are now in what I would consider a very boring, flat freight market, though. And that continues, I don't think, you know, with everybody out at their conferences, I don't think that's going to change here in the near term. Let's go to the next one and talk about the outbound tender rejection index over time. This is the seasonality chart. Now, when I show you the OTRI in this perspective, very flat, not that active compared to 2021, 2022. Year over year, we're just marginally higher. We go to the next chart to talk about demand a little bit, OTVI. Nothing's changing here. We got through Easter. Those circles are Easter from the years prior. The demand side, not showing a lot of volatility as we would expect, but honestly, it's outperforming my expectations for the month of April thus far, especially when you talk about the year over year figures being about 9 to 10% higher. Any other year, I say 9 to 10% higher volume. We are in a chaotic freight market.
Yeah. And it is not chaotic in any way.
Nope.
I think it's interesting. You talked about the NTI and the OTRI chart up and to the right. Mm-hmm. I looked today's daily watch. If you look at it, if you look at Ontario, largest freight market in the country by outbound volume, both volumes trending higher from March to April, rejection rates trending higher March to April. Like, rejection rates are at like the highest level they've been all year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, and that's kind of the market I look to see kind of how, think of it like as the heartbeat, as Southern California goes, the rest of the freight market goes, it's starting to show these signs of life. The volatility in that market has picked up dramatically in the last, call it 6 months.
Yep.
Shows the fragility in the market that's, it's not there. It's not readily like seen or felt, but the underlying like trends are that it's becoming more and more fragile. And what that means is that at some point you're going to feel it. It's just a matter of a guessing game of when that actually happens.
Yeah. I was talking to a few people the other day about this concept of, hey, we see spot rates increasing here. Hey, we see tender rejection rates increasing there. Is this it? Is this the, no. Think about how supply and demand work in the aggregated freight market. Yeah. As you see capacity come offline and get lower and lower, the chances for these rocks, if you will, if you're thinking about demand as kind of the tide or the under the whatever the hard surface underneath the tide going out, as the tide goes out, these rocks are going to have more chances to kind of percolate. So these percolations are a natural process where we see they're temporary, and it certainly doesn't mean that everything's going to be up and to the right forever. That's not how the world works, but it's certainly a component where we start to see, especially when you have these disruptive forces, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which we'll talk about here in a minute, not really having a huge impact on the freight market as we didn't expect it would, but things like that can start to show up in the numbers a little bit, some temporary disruptions. Jacksonville, for instance, has had its share of kind of marginalized disruptive behavior over the last couple of months and last year even. Phoenix last year. Huge kind of surprise market for a lot of people that operate in the spot market.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is moving some of your facilities and the things moving out of California, probably around policies in that state. But I mean, that's a longer term trend and like changes. Like the facilities that they already have built in Southern California are going to be used, and clearly they are using them to. I mean, really. You look at the growth. I mean, that's an area. I mean, you start looking at imports, and Descartes released their March figures. I mean, you're talking up 13%, 15% year over year, holiday related, but you were up almost 0.5% from February, which was
lunar
a
holiday,
really strong, Lunar New Year. You were up 4% from February, which timing wise, you may have thought you would have seen a little degradation compared to February. Didn't happen. Yeah. And so it may show up in April, but I mean...
I think
overall, it's...
Yeah, you're looking at IOTI. We're up 6% at this point year over year. And that's not a huge figure by any means, but it's certainly like... It is a thing. Like demand is better than it was this time last year. We just talked about OTVI.
Yeah.
Up 9% year over year right now. And... IOTI, import demand, up year over year. A lot of that has to do with the fact that inventories are just in a better position.
Yeah, and seasonally, I mean, this is a period where you would see IOTI maybe not, like, it's kind of in a lull because largely a lot of that summer freight is likely left. That's what that pull forward ahead of the Lunar New Year was, and even some of the rebound was.
Yep.
The question is, when does this peak start on the ocean? And how strong is it? Because like last year, you looked at it, you don't really see a true peak, but you see this long, prolonged, like strong tide through really starting in kind of late July, early August. And it held all the way through the end of the year.
Right.
And like, so there's like no, like you saw the dip for Golden Week, but the recovery from that was just as strong. The question is, if we start earlier this year, say start in earlier July or mid-July, like some of the executives of these ocean liner or ocean carriers are expecting, like, do you see a more peak-like move, or do you see another continued, like, long, drawn-out peak, which would ultimately be a positive for freight demand moving into, like, the early parts of next year, where you might see continued growth?
Yeah, so, the sustainable growth is good. Like, you, this is what you want. These kind of undulations, these huge spikes aren't sustainable.
Yeah.
And they kind of break things. You may reap the benefits, you know, in the short term.
Yeah.
But long run, it's just not, I mean, we're dealing with, you know, a very short term, like an overheating, if you will, right now. That's why the freight market is in this depressive state. Due to the oversupply, because we had a very unsustainable growth.
Yes.
And right now we're seeing a very healthy sustainable growth rate.
Yes.
And that's okay. Like, we shouldn't be upset about that. The capacity deterioration rate is also relatively slow, as it normally is. And, you know, Craig, I listened to our CEO, Craig Fuller, talk the other day, one of our QBRs,
yeah.
because 'tis the season for that. And, you know, he's basically waiting on this exit. Like, we haven't really seen this huge wash of trucking carrier failures like we saw in 2019.
Yeah.
And his thesis is the fact that banks and brokerages, banks are lending money still, and they're not. They're not lending money to
some of these operators. They're probably making more money right now lending money because the interest rates are high.
So high. And, you know, and you know, the finances of this are, this is really kind of depressing itself, is that banks don't have to have you stay in business forever. That actually is okay. They know that there's a certain percentage of failure. As long as you make it to a certain point in time, they will get all of their money back.
Yeah.
And they
I mean, this is why they have so many people behind the scenes working on data, because they understand exactly how long and what the average cycle is.
Oh, they are making their money.
Yeah. And that's why you're not getting, I mean, these loans aren't at the rate of what the Fed funds rate is, right? The rate that they borrow, that rate is, it's higher, right? I mean, that's why auto loans are 7-8% to 10%, right? And the Fed funds rate's 5%. That little margin is that risk profile that they're taking on. They're making
risk reward.
Yeah.
That's what finance is the cost of risk.
Yes.
And credit cards, perfect example.
What's why they're at 25%
average credit card rate in the United States right now. Think about the spread.
Yeah.
It's because the average consumer doesn't know what they're doing with their money. And that risk is worth an extra 20% of interest.
Yeah. And that's why if you, from a credit card's perspective or a bank's perspective, for getting way out of freight. Yeah. But the idea being they're taking on all this risk of you defaulting, right? And it's worth 20% of above that rate, right? And when you go and you make a minimum payment, that's why most of your payment, when you make a minimum payment, is an interest. That's why you'll never get ahead if you only, it will take 20, 30 years.
You want that consistent money coming in, pay that minimum. And they're not there to help financially advise you. And
it's not in their best interest to get the...
No.
They want you to take out more. They want you to overextend yourself to some degree.
And this is a decent segue into the CPI release, which I think is the biggest thing to talk about today. I know you have a lot of thoughts, but I mean, we're talking about a CPI that came out at 3.5%, 3.8% core, which is stripping out the volatile gas and food components. This exceeded people's expectations. I don't know that I was surprised by this whatsoever. Just the nature of how our economy works. I mean, the Fed has a narrative that they're trying to tell us about, and I think some of that is buried in some responsibility that they have as kind of the voice of the economy. But the reality is that raising interest rates actually does, in a way, increase inflation. It is not a pure deflationary thing. When we're talking about credit cards, some of that risk is getting passed along to the consumer, not in the form of an interest rate.
It's prices are going up, but then it does get passed off in an interest rate, though, to some degree, right? I mean, interest rates have gone from 20% to 26%, right?
For sure.
And the Fed has raised it 500. They've just moved it exactly with the Fed. Mm-hmm. They know their risk profile. They're not going to increase it.
Yep.
But that is a hidden cost to the consumer,
right?
Because if you raise the interest rates, you don't feel it when you go and pay money at the groceries.
Exactly.
Your prices are higher there. And if you have to go put it on a credit card, your price to pay the card, if you don't pay it month to month, has gone up too.
Yep.
And that's the part that gets hidden. And it's kind of like the CPI in itself is useful in one way. And that is to see the direction of which you think inflation is going. It continuously goes up. Prices continuously go up. That's why the Fed's long-term target for inflation on the PCE or core PCE is 2%. Means 2% growth, inflation keeping in line with growth equal to what the economy should grow over a long time, which would make the consumer not really feel price increases, right? Right now, you're not going to feel it. Right now, you look at core inflation from a core perspective on the CPI at 3.8%. That is, it is flattened out, which is I would argue is the bigger concern is that it is not continuing this trend line lower,
right,
which is what the Fed wants to see to kind of give credence to rate cuts. Mm-hmm. It is flattening out, and the overall headline CPI is going up.
Right.
It is not going down. It is not flattening out. It has increased the last 2 months in a row. It just doesn't make sense to cut rates anytime in the next two, likely in the next two cycles. Like,
yeah. So let's talk about that, because that's really the big takeaway for freight and global supply chain management is when you talk about interest rates being higher or elevated above expectation, a lot of these places didn't budget in huge interest rate, you know, inflation in their capital expenditures a couple of years back.
Yeah.
And we're still dealing with that. So they're sitting on, you know, not taking on this debt. Some of that debt has increased significantly, obviously. Yeah. So when they have all of this debt concern and they're actually raising the price point, so businesses don't go out and buy stuff to keep inflation down. And so therefore, you're not going to have this investment and goods demand growth.
Exactly. It's a raising interest rates is a demand destroyer from the perspective of it makes capital more expensive. Mm-hmm. People don't go and make investments because they can go and return 5% on a treasury bond, right? Yeah. And that's what, risk-free? We can, that is a whole different topic on if it's actually risk-free or no. And I'm not qualified to talk about that. But the idea being that that is risk-free and they can return 5%,
right?
It's attractive for most risk profiles, right? I mean, if you're looking, so you don't go make investments. Mm-hmm. Guess what? When you cut rates, it drives that. But now we're pushing, you see inflation still high. Mm-hmm. There's no, when you go and cut interest rates, it increases demand levels. It's not instant, it's not overnight, but over time, it will increase demand. Guess what? When demand increases and supply doesn't change, prices go up. So it's like this double-edged sword. You're going to go cut interest rates and you're still fighting this or thinking about cutting interest rates. You're still fighting inflation that's clearly rampant. It's not gone away like to the level that people thought it was, right? Transitory inflation. Some of it was, but what you're seeing now is not what was transitory in the market. This is what actually happened.
Well, you think about this from a business standpoint. Like, look at the OTVI.
Yeah.
Up 9% year over year.
Yeah.
And you're expecting inflation to go down.
Yeah.
People are buying 9%, or we're
moving
9% more freight in the economy than we were this time last year. And you think inflation's going to go down.
No.
That doesn't make logical sense.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't lend credence to interest rate cuts. I mean, the next one,
now,
right?
Maybe inflation didn't go up as much as it could have had you not raised those rates.
Which is, I mean, is a good thing too, right? I mean, slowing down the rate of inflation is always going to be a good thing from a perspective that it's not at 5% anymore. It's at 3.5%. But I mean, we're still talking growth in inflation higher than what the economy is feeling. Thus, like from a consumer perspective, you're getting less bang for your buck. Your real wage is down.
Minimum payments on those credit cards are inching higher.
And your spending power is declining, right? Like that's which is why it's so interesting that we're at 9% OTVI increases is because like from a consumer perspective, their spending power is declining, right? But a lot of it has to go on the business side of inventory. They cut inventory levels.
Yeah. That I mean, part of it.
That is why you're seeing inventory levels have corrected to a level that are healthy. Mm-hmm. And now you're in this replenishment cycle because guess what? The consumer continues to spend. If you go and look at credit card spending, now the holiday skewed this, the Easter holiday, it was up almost 5% year over year during that week of Easter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty substantial. And if you look at the LMI and
inventory levels did jump for the LMI this month.
Jumped early in the month, back half of the month, much slower growth. Yep. Some of this, I think, was...
It times perfectly with Lunar New Year and the pull-forward effect that that has on shipping patterns. And most of that freight that was coming to the West Coast was scheduled right to hit, right at March 3rd, 4th.
Yeah.
And that's going to inflate those inventory levels, which that's, you know, just some structural stuff you have to know about the market.
Yeah, exactly. But I think some of that is, well, I think the credit card spending data is one of those things. It's like, look at it with a grain of salt. But yep. people are continuing to spend money.
I think that's the takeaway.
And that's the key.
They're not really reducing their spending behavior that much. No. And we're about to go not into a season that typically has more spending as temperatures warm up.
Yeah, they haven't reduced it in a way that like is like, oh boy, let's hit the brakes. Like you're still seeing real sales kind of flat to slightly down, but it's not in a way that's like, oh, this thing, whoa, hit the brakes.
Yep.
The other flip side is the labor economy and like what's going on in the labor market. You saw a jobs number come out at 303,000, mm-hmm. blew 303,000, blew expectations out of the water, but you start looking under it, 66% of the added jobs came in healthcare, government, mm-hmm. and leisure and hospitality.
Yep.
Like, and then you add in that retail, department store, grocery, things like that, saw bumps of about 20,000 jobs. So like you're seeing growth in jobs that are in this part-time hiring cycle. Does that lend credence to a strong economic footing or as strong as what the headline numbers suggest? And I think the answer to that is, or long run is, it's hard to say, but it doesn't feel like it's as solid. Everybody made a big deal of that number. It may not be as solid as what the headline number.
At an aggregate level, you have to be careful, very yes. careful about what goes into that cake. Because yep. you can't see the ingredients very easily. You have to break it down, I think is what you're saying.
Yes.
I think another component of this inflation is that wage growth is still relatively high
yeah.
year over year. I mean, we're talking about over 4% wage growth. It's come down significantly from 2022, where I think it was averaging like 6% year over year numbers. But now it's all the way down to like 4-something. And that's, yeah. as long as that's happening, that's also an inflationary thing.
Yeah. I mean, it seeing wage growth drives spending, yeah. continued consumption.
Yeah.
Because consumers, American consumers specifically, don't know how to save money.
Yeah.
They see it hit their bank account, they spend it on things.
Yeah. So I want to divert this really quickly to the trucking sector and trucking market. We had some news come out. John Kingston wrote a few articles, and I want to talk about Baltimore really fast to wrap the show so everybody can go back to watching the Masters on their phone at their conferences. So Freightways, weak market or not, truck transportation jobs saw a healthy jump in March. Now, this is a relatively surprising figure. We saw, you know, the second largest amount in a 15-month period starting in 2023. They grew by the second largest amount, I should say. And, you know, it's kind of taken people off guard in the way that this, of course, isn't just the truck drivers. This is the back office and people like that. With those 3 months of rising numbers, truck transportation jobs in March were 15,800 more than reported in August of last year, when a loss of 31,600 jobs took the total down to 1.5 million. You know, the big decline, of course, fueled by Yellow shutting down. Now, I want to pull up one chart, the CDNCA, Care and Details Net Changes in Trucking Authorities. Now, if you look at this chart really closely at the very edge, in March, we actually saw a little bit of a reversion. We saw some growth weeks in terms of operating authorities entering. We netted positive for 2 weeks in the month of March. This is a little baffling to everyone. And this jobs data actually kind of supports the fact that March, for some reason, for trucking, was an expansionary period.
Yeah.
And I think there's some theories in that article that are pretty good. David Spencer at Arrive talks about how, you know, it's baffling, but the steady growth over the last two quarters indicates that carriers and fleets are making investments in drivers ahead of the potential flip. And I think that's the only theory that I can come to that's like, people are expecting a turn.
Because it's not dependent on interest rates, surprisingly enough, right?
Right.
Hiring practices don't, and like the trends in that aren't dependent on interest rates. So yeah. if you have budgeted, guess what? You don't have to worry about interest rate cuts around hiring practices. But yes, I mean, that's when you should. I think there's some idea that the market's ready to turn. And the fact, well, it is starting to turn, that you need to be ready for it to turn.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, we're months away yeah. minimum from that probably happening based on the data. The last story and final story, rerouting trucks and ships away from Baltimore, what early data shows. As we expected, this would happen, you know, not you know, that Baltimore's a huge port of origin or whatever for a lot of freight, but we have just really not seen any significant impact on domestic transportation. We have data that, of course, shows that the Port of Baltimore import TEUs are down dramatically. But you've got the Port of Norfolk. Yeah, if we pull that up real fast, this is TEU volumes by Norfolk, Savannah, Baltimore, and Jacksonville. Baltimore in the white there, plummets. The only one that I can really think of that really has a strong correlation here, connection, looks like Norfolk.
Yeah.
Overall.
Makes sense. Closest.
Run. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. We're not really seeing volumes change that much on the domestic truckload side, though.
No.
Even though it's taking them a longer time to drive through there.
Yeah. It's time consuming, right? Like, they're still going there. Stuff still has to move. So.
Got to drive around it.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate. But yeah,
they didn't like driving through there to begin with.
True.
Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week.